Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, so I guess we're going to have a cold opening of the show because the theme song did not play, but it is Wednesday, and it is time for everybody who is listening to get infused with me, Pamela Michelle, and my co-host, Andrew Fishbane. Fish, how are you?
I'm good. I guess this kind of makes up for the last time when we played the whole song.
Yeah, maybe that was probably, you know, the radio god saying you went a little over the line with your usage of the song, so now this week it's not going to play for you.
Well, you know,
either way.
Exactly. It's either that or I'll blame it on the weather because it seems like the weather is playing tricks on pretty much the entire country except for where I am.
Oh, it's awful. We got 5 more inches of snow yesterday.
It's completely unbelievable to me, and
see, the thing is, and I know that this is a sports talk show, but I'm going to indulge just for a few minutes just because.
Please.
I want to. We have 90 feet of snow.
That's
I'll
a lot.
I'll repeat again. 90 feet of snow.
That's basically from home plate to first base stood up.
Yeah, and it's dangerous to drive. And you cannot see over these snow mounds when you are driving. It is very dangerous when you're coming around corners, pulling out of parking lots.
You do realize
trying
that,
to just basically get by going even round the corner or down the street. And it's nerve-wracking, it's frustrating, and the thing is you have to be very defensive when you're driving, even more so because of it, and to the point where I will pull to the end, and if I can't see past the snowbank, I now beat my horn before I even make a turn. It's the only way to let people know that, hey, I'm coming, like I'm turning. And
that's just crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's nuts. It really is nuts. Like, I'll have to tomorrow at some point take a couple of pictures because, like, basically the way it looks is that the sidewalks have little paths like mazes and that, like, streets are buried in igloos.
Now, I heard a rumor, and I don't know if I heard this from you or from somebody else, that you guys had to ask permission to push a lot of the snow into the Boston Harbor. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, Boston had to get special permission from the environmental agencies to actually put it into the harbor and start putting it into the oceans as well, because there is nothing else to do. And of course, people are taking this opportunity to be Class A morons, and people are jumping out of like 3-4 story windows onto these snowbanks, and
that just brings a whole other level of stupidity to the situation.
Yeah,
one of these snowbanks is going to be covering a fire hydrant, and someone's going to end up paralyzed. So,
right, exactly. It's so ridiculous, and we're expecting more snow on Saturday.
Are you kidding? I was just going to ask, when is it supposed to end? Do you know?
I don't know. We got 5 inches yesterday. The MBTA service in Boston was completely shut down all day Sunday because they haven't even restored full service, and they said that because of the weather, if we don't get any more snow, then it is going to take a full month for the city to recover and restore service up to the way it used to be. A full month.
That's insane. And if, unfortunately, if everything melted where it was right now, the city would be flooded, correct?
Oh, yeah, the city would totally be flooded, and the streets at night would just be sheets of ice. Makes it very dangerous to drive because, that's even worse because I don't care how good, you know, your tires are or anything. Even if you have new tires with traction and stuff, there is no traction for ice. Like, at that point, I would rather have the streets be covered in snow.
And black ice was always the thing I was the most afraid of when I lived there was black ice because that's just bad news.
Yeah, it really is. It's really tough. You have to really make sure that you're being as careful driving as you can. I mean, it sounds really ridiculous, but it's true. I mean, you look at some of the stuff, and the thing is, we had a very bad winter probably about, I want to say, 96, 97 or so, where we actually got more snow, where there was, by the end of the winter, our snowfall total was like 105, 107 feet of snow. But the difference between that and this is that when we had those snowstorms, we had like three or four days in between where it was in the low 40s, where the snow was actually melting, and some of it melted away before we got whacked with the other snowstorm. We haven't had a day really here. Today, the high reached 28 degrees.
Oh, I feel so bad. It just really sucks. I mean, it was going to be great because, you know, spring training started, pitchers and catchers have now started to report, so you can actually at least watch TV and see your team down at Fort Myers there in the sunshine, but still, it's no consolation.
It's no consolation. It's not the same. And the only consolation that we actually kind of got was a little bit of good news today. Well, I don't know how good it is, but Cole Hamels I have my take on this because Red Sox Nation is getting super pumped up for this. And to me, I just categorize this as lip service, where he said the right things. And as you know, Cole Hamels is going to the Phillies are trying to move him, but they're asking a lot. And they're asking, especially from the Red Sox, they want Mookie Betts and they want Swihart, which Swihart is off the table for any team because we need to see what the kid has. And it personally warms my heart because Jason Varitek has taken a shine to him, and he's actually basically picking the brain of Varitek. And that could be – that's just such a good – resource to have take you under their wing. Do you know what I mean?
I do, but the problem is my source is in Philadelphia, and I've talked to people in Philly about this because it's become obviously very interesting to me as a Dodger fan, and that's one of the teams he wants to go to, is the Phillies. As of right now, obviously things can change, but as of right now, Ruben Amaro is saying he will not trade Cole Hamels to the Red Sox unless Swihart is a part of the deal. If he's not a part of the deal, he's not going to make the trade, even if you guys
throw in
Mookie Betts.
Right, which is why, which is why we know that this deal is not going to get done, because the Red Sox aren't going to pout Swihart. They're just not. And the thing is, when Cole Hamels today was asked about going to Boston, I just feel like Boston was one of the 20 teams on his block list where he had to waive that trade. And I just feel it was more lip service where he was going to say, a reporter asked him, you know, what about Boston? I don't really think he's going to stand there and say, no, I seriously don't want to go there. I mean, if he wanted to, he could have been like, are you kidding with all that snow? No, thank you. Like, something like that and a lighter issue might have been a little bit funny. But I think that the only thing he could say is, of course I wouldn't mind going to Boston. The team gives you an opportunity to win. You know, he did the very political thing. So I don't understand why people in Red Sox Nation are really getting so super pumped and excited about, oh, well, now Cole Hamels wants to come here. He wants to. Did you hear how he said? And it's like, no.
No, where he wants to go is he wants to go to San Diego, or he wants to go to the Angels, or he wants to go to the Dodgers. He's a West Coast guy. He's from San Diego. So I would imagine if he could go anywhere, the Padres would probably now, with the team that they have, probably be his number one choice. But the Padres aren't going to part with those prospects either. That's why they signed James Shields. So it's right now it's going to be a game of chicken for Ruben Amaro and for the Phillies, because Amaro has to win that trade. He can't make a bad deal here. If he does, it will be his, no question.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So that was sort of my little, you know, bright spot, but not bright spot. It's like you can't get too excited over a trade that you know is never going to happen, especially since the main piece of the trade you know the Red Sox are not going to be parting with.
Right. But I will say this. I would not surprise me if Cliff Lee proves that he's healthy in the beginning of spring training if he is not a Red Sox. Because he will cost a lot less prospect-wise. He is probably a little more expensive, but he won't be there. His contract is not long-term. I think it's just for one more year plus maybe an option. So it wouldn't surprise me if he proves that he's healthy if the Red Sox go out and get him, because they, as good as this team is, right now they're a playoff contender, but they're not a World Series contender until they get an ace.
No. Right. And I feel that way. I mean, for me, I had already said that I feel that this is a lot of gambling on the Red Sox part. I get that, you know, they have good guys that aren't technically going to go out and lose you games, but you don't know what you're getting from these guys. Like, I feel like they're playing poker of sorts, where it's very it's almost like they're calling bluff. You know what I mean? Because you don't know what you're going to get. And a lot of this, and this is the part that makes me really sad, is that a lot of this hinges on Clay Buchholz. And I don't care what anyone says, that's what a big X factor of this rotation is. Because when Clay Buchholz is on, he's brilliant. And that's what frustrates Red Sox fans, is because they know that what he's capable of. It's just that when he gets inside his own head and he starts getting shelled, it's almost like he becomes a piece of string on a sweater and just starts to unravel. Like, he does not have amnesia. He does not have that, all right, that was a mistake pitch, I got to let it go type of thing. Like, when he starts getting hit, he's done.
Right. No, you are absolutely right. The good news for the Red Sox, just so I don't want people, all you Red Sox Nation out there, to think that I think that your team is not good or you don't have a chance. The good news is every single team in that division has question marks, whether it be
the Blue Jays
who have question marks about their starting rotation, or the Orioles who have to try to replace Nick Markakis and Nelson Cruz, and they didn't do it this offseason, or the Yankees, who I think are in much worse shape rotation-wise than the Red Sox, or even the Rays, who I think could be better than people think, but right now are probably fifth place in that division. I think the Yankees are a fourth place team. And I think the Orioles, Blue Jays, and Red Sox are fighting for first, second, and third. And right now, I couldn't tell you the order. If someone held a gun to my head to predict the order, I would say the order would go Blue Jays, Red Sox, Orioles, but I can't guarantee that.
No, it's not a guarantee, because there's so, it's almost like that's the beauty of this division, is that there are so many different variables and every team has so many different question marks. It's really going to depend on the health in the longevity of the season, because that is something, and I don't care who you are, that is something that you cannot predict. You cannot predict how a team is going to hold up health-wise and injury-wise, and I think that that's going to be the biggest thing when it comes to, you know, the Blue Jays, Sox, and Orioles. Just anyone in this division, because there's so many different question marks and holes in each one of these teams, is going
absolutely
to be...
Absolutely. What's funny is, you know, you said you can't predict health. Here's my one health prediction for you. Masahiro Tanaka will not make it through the season, and he will have to undergo Tommy John surgery before the end of the year. And I will fully blame the Yankees for
that
because he should have undergone Tommy John surgery last year, and he didn't. So Tanaka will have to have Tommy John surgery at some point this year. I think it's very ironic that the team with the best rotation is also the worst team in the division, and that's the Tampa Bay Rays. They have the best rotation in that division, and they are the worst team.
Yeah, and it really didn't help either, where I don't know if you've seen the pictures from Red Sox training camp. There were a couple that were leaked of a certain panda who has actually ballooned up and
doesn't shock me.
Huh? Did you see those pictures of Sandoval?
I did not. It doesn't shock me. And it also, you know, as a Red Sox fan, the one thing I'd be scared of is Hanley Ramirez playing left field. When he's in the lineup and you have his bat, he's one of the best hitters in the game. Problem is, he's not in long enough, and I have no idea how defensively he's going to be able to handle left field. And unfortunately, you have one of the best designated hitters, easy for me to say, best DHs in the game in David Ortiz, so Hanley has to play to be able to be in the lineup. He can't take a day off in DH because Ortiz has to be the DH.
Yeah, exactly. There were pictures that were leaked out from Red Sox training camp, and Sandoval, who showed up, you know, at San Francisco's camp last year looking very svelte and very in shape, and his brother, who is his agent, said he will never gain that weight back. Well, maybe I think almost... And you hate to say the Red Sox should have put that clause in his contract. Like, if he went over a certain weight, you know, that they, you know, would deduct money from his contract. I know that sounds ridiculous to say, but he should have had a weight clause in his contract, because I understand that in baseball you can be a bigger fat guy and still play. But, you know, the pitchers were a little bit alarming to me, just because he had gained that weight back. And I just feel like he feels, to me, it just showed almost a lack of professionalism, because he now is like, okay, well, I got my big contract. And
no,
so
I get that.
Here
and
goes
now,
the weight.
I haven't seen the pictures, but in Panda's defense, I will say this. There, several years ago, I want to say it was 4 or 5 years ago, there were pictures that came out of the Braves spring training camp of Chipper Jones looking incredibly fat. It turns out it was just the camera angle and the wind at the same time making him look a lot fatter than he was. So it may not necessarily be that he's gained that weight. It may just be a camera angle, because the everyone in Atlanta got really scared because Chipper was huge.
Yeah.
Turns out he wasn't that big. So, like I said, I haven't seen any pictures. I don't know if that's the case or not.
Well,
and to be honest with you, it wouldn't surprise me, after winning a world title in San Francisco and then getting paid, if Panda didn't get fat and happy in this off season.
Right. Well, it wasn't. I'm actually trying to pull the pictures up, because it wasn't just the pictures when you looked at them. It was sources down there too that, you know, we have talked to, and
right.
that has been firsthand.
Now, I will say this. It's funny, because it used to be, you know, low so many years ago, 25, 30 years ago, that you came to spring training out of shape and you used to spring training to get into shape. It isn't that way anymore, obviously, with you know, year-round workouts and these routines that these guys have. So now they usually come into camp in shape, and they're just trying to fine-tune. Obviously, Panda's going to have to drop some weight at spring training, and he probably will. But I will also say this for him. He does play well, even at a heavy weight. He's a lot more nimble.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's the thing, is like I said, they do have, you know, you can get away with baseball being a heavier baseball player. You just can't.
Yeah, I mean,
David
Ortiz ain't exactly Kate Moss there.
No, he's not, but it's different. It's different. It really is. It's different. I know that a couple of people had called David Ortiz, you know, different names for the weight gain and stuff, but it's not the same. It's I'm trying to find these pictures, but it is different.
There used to be a relief pitcher who pitched for the Dodgers and the Braves and a couple other teams. His name was Terry Forster, and he was once called, which was my favorite nickname of all time, they just called him a big fat tub of goo, and that's exactly what he was. So, you know, the Rick Rushel and Paul Rushel, the Rushel brothers, both very big players, very good. They're, you can be fat. CeCe Sabathia is not a skinny kid.
Oh, he is not, but he also does not play every day.
No, but you can see the toll it's taken on his knees as well, which is why this is, once again, going back to the Yankees, why I think the Yankees are going to have problems. His knees aren't going to hold out. I don't think he holds out the entire season.
Yeah.
I don't think that Tanaka holds out the entire season, and I'm not so sure I want to be counting on Ivan Nova to be one of my mainstays in my rotation.
So, speaking of the Yankees, now how do you feel about them retiring Andy Pettitte's number?
I have absolutely no problem with that. Andy Pettitte
came
clean. I don't
either. I personally like Andy Pettitte.
He came clean right when it was brought up. He didn't lie about it. He didn't try to hide from it. He came clean. He asked for forgiveness. And everybody moved on from that. And that's why I have respect for Andy Pettitte. Because in this country, we will absolutely forgive you if you admit it. We will just hate you if you're a liar. He wasn't a liar about it. He admitted it. He moved on. He was still a Yankee great. He absolutely deserves to have his number retired by the Yankees.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I never had a problem with Andy Pettitte at all. And I actually had just tweeted the picture to you. So you can go see it.
Ooh, I'll have to take a look at this and see Fat Panda.
Yeah, I erased a little bit of what it said. It says, Red Sox fans freaking out over Pablo Sandoval's weight gain. Apparently have never seen a photo of Pablo Sandoval before. And that is the – do you see it? Rounded.
No, I'm laughing just because they said,
right?
Apparently I've never seen Pablo Sandoval before.
Yeah. So these were pictures were taken from Red Sox camp.
Oh, it's from the Washington Post. Okay.
Yeah. It's from the Washington Post.
Oh, well, I see him in a Giants uni.
No, there's one in – it's a Red Sox one. Wow,
he looks pregnant.
Yeah. Yeah, those are the pictures that we had seen. So
yeah, he's in shape. It's it's as round as a shape. I was going to say it's pear shape, but yeah, that'll work.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's just, to me, that's just a lot of weight.
That's really almost inexcusable. That's almost inexcusable.
Yeah,
now,
exactly.
Once again, like I said, it could be the outfit. He could be, you know, sticking his belly out. I don't know. Now, Steve Silva, whoever he is, says, safe to say, Pablo Sandoval didn't miss too many meals this offseason. Yeah, I would say it's pretty safe to say that. I would say he could probably drop 5 to 10 of those pounds before the season starts. He'll look like he did last year, and everything will be fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's very funny because that's the thing that people are freaking out about the most is, you know, Sandoval's weight, but
you guys have a lot more other things to freak out about right now. Yeah, you have a lot more other things to freak out about. Even if they win the East, they still have to try to figure out a way to get past a much improved White Sox team, a still good Tigers team, a very good Indians team, an Angels and a Mariners team, also both very good. So there may not be a wild card coming out of the AL East for the first time in God knows how long.
I agree. I mean, I think it's going to be one of those years where if you don't win the division, you aren't in.
Yeah,
that's
and can you imagine the Yankees missing
that.
The playoffs 3 years in a row?
Oh.
Ooh.
It's like a Red Sox dream. you know, the thing is, it's very tough for me because I don't remember a lot of the lean years. And here in Red Sox Nation right now, over basically the last 10 years or so, we've been fairly spoiled with the way that this team has been. And I know that, you know, we went from worst to first, winning the World Series and stuff, but for the most part, and even in some of the leaner years, the Red Sox have kept their team competitive, but, and I'm trying to word this correctly, even though they've kept their team competitive, it was almost like the buildup of, okay, here we go, here we go, here we go. It's Soxtober, it's Sox. Oh, they just broke my heart. Okay, now let's turn our attention to the Bruins. Let's turn our attention to the Patriots. What are the Celtics doing? It was one of those things that you almost expected them to build you up to break your heart, to be competitive enough. And then it changed. They no longer built you up to break your heart. They were just competitive. They were expected to win, you know, and now that's the standard. It's this whole, whole cowboy up, new era type of attitude with the Millars, and, you know, then you're talking about Schilling with his bloody sock, and you're just like, it's a different mentality now. It's not okay where they're just competitive enough to break your heart. They have to be competitive, and not just be competitive, but they're expected to win now.
Yeah, and I will tell you, it's not only their winning that has made people think that way. It's, and rightly or wrongly, it's the success of the Patriots, the Celtics, and the Bruins. And I know we had this conversation, but because all three of those teams have been so successful, the Red Sox now have to be successful. Otherwise, they will get thrown to the wayside. All of a sudden, Red Sox Nation, as great as it is, the Red Sox won't matter as much anymore.
Right. I mean, and it's a little bit tougher right now because the Celtics basically are the team that nobody's talking about. No one is talking about the Celtics here. People don't really want to talk about the Celtics. They don't care what Danny Ainge is doing. They don't care, like, what they're going to trade away. They don't care how many picks the Celtics have. Like, no one is talking about the Celtics. What everybody right now is talking about still are these topics. Panda.
Yep.
Deflategate. Deflategate has ruled this area for so long, especially with now, you know, the new little chirpings that have been leaked out and everything, where it's just an embarrassment for ESPN, in my opinion, at this point, just because I feel like they're almost perpetuating the story in order to cover their own ass to not make them look stupid for reporting something that really took on a life of its own because of them. Like, ESPN at this point has egg on their face, according, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, yeah. Unfortunately, ESPN has no competition, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
And that's really annoying.
Yeah, exactly.
They really can get away, because they're the conglomerate. Right, as much as, you know, NBC Sports and CBS Sports and Fox Sports and whatever else tries to compete with it, they will, you know, unfortunately, ESPN has such a head start and such a mega, as you say, conglomerate, they will never lose it. So basically, they're like the Yankees were, that if they signed a free agent that sucked, it didn't matter because they could just cover it up with more money. Whereas a team like the Pirates, if they signed a free agent that sucked, it dragged the team down for years. So, you know, and that's basically ESPN. They won't get dragged down by anything because they're too big and too good and have too many properties.
Right, and I understand that. I just think that I just sort of think that they made themselves look foolish. I'm not saying that they're not going to recover for this. It's just such a foolish story at this point. It just needs to stop because it's almost like they're trying to put makeup, you know, on a situation that just everybody knows is very ugly underneath.
So you don't think that the snowstorm is God punishing the Boston area for the cheating Patriots there?
No. No, I do not.
I'd seen that posted a couple of times in a couple of different places. I thought it was rather humorous.
I did see that, and actually more what I'm seeing is more Frozen posts saying whoever pissed Elsa off really needs to apologize to bring back summer. Like, I'm seeing more Disney Frozen posts, thank God. But I have seen those. I don't feel that way. And, you know, I mean, it's nice to make light of a situation. It is not fun here right now. And I'm not
No,
trying
I would
to,
imagine
like,
not. And for the first time since we've started talking about weather on this show, I will not mention the temperatures here.
I mean, it's funny because our mutual friend, Lil Moore, he had said to me a couple of days ago when I had talked to him, he said, Pamela, he's like, why don't you come down to Orlando? And I was like, if I come, I won't want to leave. You don't understand. Like, I was telling him about the snow, and he was just... It's unless you've seen it, unless you're here, like you seriously don't get it, which is why I got to take pictures tomorrow, just because people will not like. There are snow mounds. Like I have so much snow in my front yard. There is no other place to put it. Like I cannot walk through my front yard at all.
You do know the difference between snowmen and snow women, right? Snowball.
No.
Oh, sorry.
It's just seriously, it's bad. It's nice to look forward to the Red Sox spring training, and it's nice to know that summer is right around the corner, but unfortunately it's also going to be a very big, big mess when this starts to also melt, and I
think you guys are going to have a lot more on your hands, more, you know what I'm saying? It's going to be very interesting to see how it gets dealt with once the weather does start heating up and you get into that, you know, 50-degree weather, which is still freezing cold, if you ask me.
Well, 50 degrees, you know, people would probably be in shorts and a T-shirt because let's just see. It right now is very cold. Very cold. It was a nice, warm, warm day today because it was about 28 degrees, and right now it's 25 degrees, which it's expected to go down to 1.
Well, if it'll make you feel any better, it's supposed to rain here on Sunday.
Yeah, it's supposed to snow here, so...
Yeah, it was 78 degrees today. It's going to be 78 again tomorrow, 77 on Thursday. Or 77 tomorrow, sorry, and 75 on Friday. Only 66 on Sunday and rainy. Yeah, it's horrible. It's been horrible. Ugh, 66 degrees. It's inhuman.
it is.
But I'll tell you this. It could be worse. You could be in International Falls, Minnesota, where it's minus 24.
Ew.
That's the coldest spot in the country today.
Is it really?
The high was 82 in Alley Chuck, Arizona. Never heard of it. But International Falls, Minnesota, minus 24. Colder than even Alaska. So Alaska must have seemed balmy.
Right, exactly. Alaska must have seemed. Funny thing is, I had met somebody from the Alaska area. And
they said, damn, this is a lot of snow.
Yeah. He said he was coming to basically have a nice vacation and everything. He's like, oh, my gosh, I thought I left this snow back home. I said, I guess you brought it with you. Maybe he brought it. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe he pissed off Elsa.
Maybe.
Is it Elsa? I believe it or not, I still have not seen Frozen.
It's Elsa. It's
okay.
Elsa, my two-year-old
I may be the only
niece.
Person left in the country that has not seen that movie.
My two-year-old niece knows it by heart, knows all the words.
Oh.
And it's very adorable the first, like, few times. And then after, my sister-in-law had to tell her that Frozen does not play on their TV anymore. Just because she walks around the house and she asks her mother what time it is. And her mother will tell her, like, the clock time. And she'll say, no, it's Frozen time. Because she wants to watch the movie. And, of course, my parents did not help the situation by going out and buying her one of those Jeeps. Like, she now has one of those motorized Jeeps
that goes 15 miles
an hour. And
that's
a Frozen
awesome.
Jeep. It's a two-seater, and it plays all the songs from the movie.
To me, that's awesome. That's exactly what your parents are supposed to do. That's what grandparents do.
Yeah, that is what grandparents do.
They take stuff over there, and they leave it so their parent has to deal with it.
Yeah.
Believe me, I know.
Exactly. I'm sure. It's sort of like the, you know, auntie who buys all the noisy toys because they don't have to be at their house.
Exactly. That's the smart aunt.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know,
waiting for our good friend, Mr. Guru there?
I believe that Russell is actually not going
snowed in.
To... He's having technical difficulties right now, so...
He's frozen.
We're just going
you see what I did there?
Let's wait around for him a little bit longer. We'll just continue to talk. If not, then...
Well, I say that because if Mr. Baxter is unable to join us,
yep.
I do believe we could take this in an entirely different direction at this point. And because baseball season is here and spring training is here and pitchers and catchers have started to report, it may be time for a first look at some fantasy strategies and just a quick look at some of the ideas that we can do for our fantasy segment here.
Okay, well, why don't we do that then? So, now, I did play fantasy baseball last year. And
yes, you did.
I have to admit, you've really got to be committed to wanting to play. And it isn't that I don't love baseball. I do. And not trying to use my busyness as an excuse or anything, but it's very fun for me the first 2 months. And you do have to be very committed to this because this is an everyday thing. Where football, it's a little different. You can go 2 or 3 days without looking at your lineup, and as long as you're good to go by, you know, 7:59 on Thursday, you're good to go. You can go a couple of days without looking at your fantasy football lineup. Of course,
which is why fantasy football is for fantasy wimps, and fantasy baseball is for people who are truly committed, or at least should be truly committed.
No, it's true. It is true because I found that out firsthand last year, and you cannot go a day without setting your lineup. You just can't. So what are your strategies, Fish, for fantasy baseball that you can give our listeners?
Well, as far as drafting goes, especially, we'll talk about drafts more than auctions. In a draft, you need to treat the pitcher like you treat the quarterback in fantasy football. Unless you're talking about Clayton Kershaw, who is an absolute an outlier, who is the only pitcher that can be taken in the first round. If you don't get Kershaw you know, around pick 6 or 7, then you don't need to take a pitcher until probably round 6 or 7, because there are so many good pitchers out there, and offense now is beginning to lack so much that it is exceedingly important that you go out and grab that pitcher, or that offense first. And then you can go out and say, you know what, now I can start looking at a pitcher. You wait till the 6th or 7th round, you can still get a guy like Johnny Cueto. You can still get probably a Jordan Zimmerman. These guys are still good, because other guys are going to take the Max Scherzers probably in round 2 or 3, a Felix Hernandez. You don't need that guy. Like I said, if you're going to take Kershaw, take him in the 1st round, get him, be happy with him. He'll be a stud all year long. You're not going to have an issue as long as you're not playing into the postseason, because that's something entirely different. But
So now, what is the position that you most covet? Would it be catcher?
It used to be, but now there are some much better hitting catchers, especially when you have a guy like Evan Gattis who has catcher eligibility. You have guys like Yan Gomes in Cleveland, and you can get catchers late because people don't think about him. Jonathan Lucroy, I've done several mock drafts. Lucroy is one of the best hitting catchers out there, and he's not going until round 10 or 11. So you could absolutely even wait on a catcher because people aren't thinking about that position. It's the hardest positions I find to fill are always second base, shortstop, and third base, maybe especially third base, because there are so few great third basemen out there.
Okay, so your draft strategy, say you get pick number one. Who are you taking with the number one pick?
Oh, there's no doubt, regardless of position or anything else, you're taking Mike Trout if you have the number one pick. He is the best player in baseball, will continue to be the best player in baseball, and there's no reason and no need to take anybody else.
Okay, so say you have, now a standard team league, is it still 10, 12 teams?
It's standard leagues are 10, usually 10 to 12 teams, yeah. And then your standard categories, you're going to have batting average, which is not a category I really like anymore, but people have it. You have batting average, you have home runs, RBIs, stolen bases, and then you can have either on-base percentage, or you can have slugging percentage, or you can have OPS. There's a ton of other categories. But you're always going to have home runs, you're always going to have RBIs, you're always going to have batting average, and you're always going to have stolen bases.
So you have 6th pick. Who are you taking with your 6th pick?
Well, if he's available, like I said, I'm taking Clayton Kershaw. If he's not available, that becomes an entirely different story. Now, because of his injury, Miguel Cabrera is actually falling, and he's falling right into that range, and I would not be upset with taking Miguel Cabrera with the 6th pick because he is that good. There are other players. Paul Goldschmidt is generally going really early. So he's not a guy I would necessarily look at because you probably can't get him with 6. But if you could, he's a good pick there. Jose Abreu, another very good pick there from the White Sox. I expect him to have just as solid as a year this year as he did last year, and he was absolutely phenomenal last year. So there are still several good players in that spot.
Okay, so now what do you find is the biggest mistake that people make when they're drafting?
One, drafting pitchers early. Two, drafting relief pitchers early. Relief pitchers is another one. Do not go chasing saves. There's always guys at the end of the draft who you can pick up that either will get saves or aren't in line for saves yet, but within the first few weeks, the closer on that team is going to be gone or is going to be out of the job, and he's going to move into that job. If you take a Craig Kimbrell or a Greg Holland in the 4th or 5th or 6th round, one of the better closers, you're wasting a pick there where you should be using it on offense, because closers are very easy to get, as saves are something you should not be chasing. It's much like steals. You don't want to...
If we're going to put it into football terms, because let's face it, when you do play fantasy sports, more people, I would think, play fantasy football than almost anything else. And I think
it's so easy. Yeah, because you set your, it's like the Ronco rotisserie. You set it and forget it.
Right, exactly. Like I said, I mean, you can go 2 or 3 days without looking at your fantasy football lineup, and then the only thing you're probably really doing to yourself is maybe missing a good waiver wire pick, but a lot of those times those are hit and miss, so you're really not screwing anything up by, you know, missing out on a waiver wire pick, so you can leave it for 2 or 3 days and just kind of forget about it a little bit. So would you equivalent that to maybe the kicker?
I was about to say, yeah, a little bit, because what I was going to say is one of the great things about fantasy baseball, and this is where it really differs from fantasy football. Fantasy football, if you have a bad draft or your number one pick gets hurt, your season is just about over, period. you can get over. You don't have to have a great draft in baseball. You can, and if your number one pick gets hurt, you can get over that. A, because the season is so long, and B, because you have so many players on a team. It's easy to make up for that one spot. Whereas in football, you have much fewer players playing who count for a lot more of the points, and it becomes that much more important to hit on everybody. So, because you said it, if you have a number one in the waiver wire in football and you miss, that can really hurt. In baseball, there's always players on the waiver wire. You almost can't miss, because if you miss one week, you have another week where there's still a ton of guys that you can get. So you can overcome injuries and a bad draft in baseball. You can't do it in football.
Now, do you find that more people are a little bit more patient when playing fantasy baseball, just because it seems to be a lot deeper than football?
That's a great question. And, excuse me, they are to a certain extent. Other times people panic a little too early. You know, it's the end of April. They have a guy who's hitting .132, and I thought he was going to be a 300 hitter, so they trade him or they drop him. And that's a mistake. You have to be patient, because so many times guys have gotten off to bad starts. Not only do they get off to bad starts, but you think that they're absolutely garbage, so you drop them, and then someone else picks them up, and they hit .350 for the rest of the season. You make that mistake, it's going to come back to bite you in the butt.
Well, the thing is, it's like, I don't technically think that anybody should be freaking out in April. I think that what you have to take into consideration is the duration of the season. I mean, this is, if you're freaking out in April, oh my gosh, take a Xanax. God help you. Because, seriously, if you're freaking out in April, because it is so different than football. I mean, football is just basically so condensed into almost just 2.5 months.
Yeah,
where,
I mean, you got to think of it this. You got to think of it this way: one fantasy football game, which is 1 week of fantasy football, is basically 10 games of baseball, because there's 162 games versus 16 games. So you multiply 16 times 10, you get 160. So it's about the same. So
right.
Ten baseball games equals one football game. So go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, as far as, like, fantasy baseball would be concerned, if some guy's hitting, like, .130 and you expected him to be a .300 player, I wouldn't really start freaking out until maybe a week or two after the All-Star break. A week or two after the All-Star break, if this guy, this draft prospect that I got, is still not performing, I'd think about cutting bait at that point, not necessarily in April.
No, absolutely. And you know, like a perfect example is Kenley Jansen, the Dodger closer, is now obviously going to, I don't know if you heard this, I'm sure you did, he's now on the DL. He had to have surgery on his foot. He's going to miss probably the first 2 months of the season. He was going into the season one of the probably top five closers in the game. He is now going to drop. And he is a perfect guy that you can target later now, because even if he misses all of April and all of May, he'll still come back for June, July, August, September. That's 4 months. The Dodgers are a good enough team. They should have 90 wins, which is an average of 15 wins a month. That means 4 months, you're getting 60 wins. Of those 60 wins, you better believe that 30 of them are going to be close enough to bring in the closer. So he should still be able to get 30 saves. You can get that from him and still pick him up in round 15, 16, 17 versus round 8, 9, or 10 where he would have gone. That's a great bargain, and that's just another example of patience and knowing the game, because, once again, you know, 2 weeks of football is basically the first month of baseball, because that's 20 games. You're probably playing 20 games in April, and that's two fantasy football games. So if you're 0-2, you're not necessarily panicking in fantasy football. You don't want to fall to 0-3, but you're not really panicking.
Right, I agree. I mean, it's one of those things where you really have to try to win out and not let your thoughts get ahead of you. I mean, when you're panicking in football, it's quite different.
Yes. And, you know, I obviously don't recommend anyone should panic when they're playing fantasy football either. Panic is absolutely the enemy at all times, because when you panic, you may end up making rash and bad decisions that will end up coming back to haunt you. And in fantasy baseball especially, it's important to stay the course, stay patient. And if you're not a patient person, I hate to say it, don't play fantasy baseball. I love fantasy baseball because I love the minutia of it. I love looking at my team every day and seeing how I can improve it, what I can do to make it better. Everyone knows that I make trades. I usually end up making more trades than anybody else in any league that I'm ever in fantasy baseball, because that's all I'm about, is improving my team however I can.
And I think that that's how you have to be, too. And the thing is, it's like trying to – I think that when you look at this, like you had brought up a point earlier, your number one pick in fantasy football can absolutely ruin you. Your number one pick in fantasy baseball actually cannot. And it's different if a guy gets injured in fantasy baseball than in fantasy football, because 4 weeks in baseball is so different than 4 weeks in football.
Absolutely. You know, a guy goes on the 15-day DL.
You can still hold on to somebody
DL.
Who's injured in baseball for 4 weeks and just get by and just replace him and just kind of, like, stash him. But whereas in fantasy football, it's a little bit different, because 4 weeks, you may not be able to stash them that long depending on how your roster is stacked and how your positioning is in the league. And unfortunately, that four-week player – might be just taking up a valuable roster spot for you.
You are absolutely correct. And, you know, and as we go on in the coming weeks leading up to baseball season, I think we're going to go more in depth in fantasy as to far as positions and things like that.
Yeah.
I think today is a good intro to it, sort of like a refresher, a primer course, if you will. But fantasy baseball to me is by far the most fun of any of the fantasy sports. Now, there are people out there, like much like you, who do get bogged down in the minutia, and it's a little difficult at times to follow it all season long. But
I liked it first, and like I said, you know what? I don't know if I just have a short attention span, and I know that that's
well. If I remember correctly,
your
team was there was also not much attachment to your team, because you let the auto draft pick a lot of your team. And that's part of it. I think you have to have an attachment to your team as well. In fantasy football, it's easy to not be as attached to your team. In fantasy baseball, it's a lot more difficult. And that's why in fantasy baseball, a lot of times, especially in baseball, people will take players from their favorite teams, because that keeps them a little more involved. The more Red Sox you have, the more Dodgers I have, the more Giants a Giants fan has, the more involved they're going to be, because that's their team.
You know, I should have known that my fantasy baseball season was not going to go very well for me when my first draft pick was Jacoby Ellsbury.
Yeah, that as a Red Sox
that
fan, that should have told you something
right
then and there. Yeah,
it should have told me something right then and there that's how my fantasy baseball season was going to go when I had Jacoby Ellsbury, when Autodraft drafted me Jacoby Ellsbury.
And, you know, it's funny because Ellsbury is one of the better players. He's absolutely a first or second round pick because of his ability. But because of who he is and who you are, it made absolute sense that was a bad omen.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I said it was a bad omen, just because all of a sudden auto draft pops it up and there he was.
Bang biscuit. Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, are you kidding me right now? Really? Although I did have a few Red Sox players on my team.
Yeah, you gotta have the right ones though.
Yeah, and that's
yeah. Having Will Middlebrooks wouldn't have done you much good last year.
No, Mr. Jenny Dell was not going to do anybody any good last year. I don't think he's going to do anybody. Mr. Jenny Dell.
Who's Jenny Dell?
Jenny Dell is Will Middlebrooks's wife now. I don't know if they're actually married. They're engaged. They might have gotten married recently. She was a...
I am so not a pulp culture guy.
This is okay. And I don't expect you to know this, just because she was a sideline reporter for NESN, for the New England Sports Network, for the Red Sox. And she basically did the dugout interviews for the Red Sox and stuff, and that's how she met Will Middlebrooks. And basically, because of their relationship, NESN kind of fired her, and she works for the MLB Network now. So she just
that's
basically
that's
is
the same
a
story that
sideline.
Happened to That's the same story that happened to Derek Lowe and I can't think of her name, a woman who used to work for Fox Sports West when Derek Lowe was on the Dodgers, and he cheated on his wife with this woman, and now they're both in Atlanta. So,
yeah.
Or they were. I mean, I don't think Derek Lowe is pitching anymore, but
no,
I understand. I understand what happened. Now, now I get it.
Yeah, that's who Jenny Dell is, and in, you know, this part of the country, especially Red Sox Nation, and on sports radio talk, on sports talk radio, on the local stations, we just basically refer to Will Middlebrooks. We don't really even use his name anymore. We just call him Mr. Jenny Dell, because he's going to not have as good a career as she is, because that's what we all kind of feel, is that he's just not going to have as good a career as she is. She's basically going to be the one that's going to, you know, bring home all the bucks, because she's
going to
have...
Well, no, because the sad part is you could have a very middling career in Major League Baseball and still make a butt ton of money.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of baseball, too.
And I believe that is actually the...
I
do believe that is the actual technical term, butt ton.
Yeah,
ton of money.
I really think so.
Boy, did this thing go off the rails quick.
but you know what it is? It's because it's the beauty of baseball contracts, and because they're very simple. Unlike NFL contracts where there's, you know, guaranteed money for this, back end money for that, you know, there's so many different components.
Right, this much counts against the cap, and this much doesn't. It's like, what?
Right.
How is he making $17 million, but he counts $23 against the cap? Explain that to me.
Yeah, they're so complicated, football contracts, and you know, they actually had projected that the cap is going to be even a little bit higher than they initially thought in football, which will be good for some teams who were kind of tight against the cap. Yeah, some teams who are tighter against the cap. I know that the Patriots are basically, you know, using that as leverage to try to hone Revis back. But I'm going to make a bold prediction. I don't think that Darrell Revis is going to be a Patriot this year.
Really? Is he going to be reunited in New York with the Jets, or is he going to be reunited in Buffalo with Rex Ryan?
Buffalo has the money, and...
Oh, you damn right we do. Come on, Bills!
You know, Buffalo has the money, and the thing is, it's very funny to me, because as we're going to transition a little bit into football just for a few seconds, it's very funny to me because now that Revis was in New England, got the Super Bowl ring, everybody's like, oh my gosh, he's so different, he's changed. He has not changed. He's the same person he was. And, you know, he doesn't mind being a hired assassin. He just doesn't. He doesn't mind that as his role. He wants to chase the money. He wants the money. I think the Patriots will give him more money than they would have probably given anybody else. But at the same time, he's the best-looking girl to dance, and everybody wants a piece at this point. And I just feel like if he's going to get a higher amount somewhere else, that's where he's going to go, just because he never viewed this as a long-term stay. And I think he's grateful and happy he won his Super Bowl ring. He accomplished what he wanted. And I think it would have been almost more beneficial and more guaranteed for him to stay had the Patriots not won the Super Bowl and paid him the money, as opposed to winning the Super Bowl. Because
I completely agree with that. I think that people will look at you and go, "You're nuts! Winning the Super Bowl? No, it doesn't." When you're a guy that's been with a team, for instance, Tom Brady. Brady, obviously, winning the Super Bowl means, I mean, not like he was going to leave anyway, but winning the Super Bowl means he's not going anywhere. He's not retiring. Yeah. He still wants to play, but a guy like Revis, who has been from team to team to team now,
he's basically been a journeyman, even though he's a fantastic player. He's basically been a journeyman at that point.
Much like Randy Moss was when he started going from team to team to team. I think it's very ironic that the team now with the most salary cap space is the Raiders. And it'll be very interesting to see what this team, with its new coach, with its new philosophy, is going to do. I mean, they actually had a good draft pick last year in Kelvin Mack in that first round. The kid out of Buffalo was turned out to be the absolute stud they thought he was going to be. Let's see what else they do. They re-signed Charles Woodson, who, you know, may be getting up there in age, but he's still one of the better cover guys in the league. So it's going to be very interesting to see what they do.
Exactly. I mean, I have said that it would not surprise me if Darrell Revis was not back in New England, and everybody's putting, oh, he's accustomed to winning now. No, he's not. He's not accustomed to winning now. He got his Super Bowl ring, and that's what he wanted. And he's going to go for it. It would shock me more if he went for the lesser money, because I'm telling you, as much money as the Patriots are going to pay him, and they are not accustomed to paying for players. They're just not, because they always believe in that they're going to get somebody else for a lesser amount type of philosophy. So they've really never – it would be different for them to actually pay or overpay a player to stay. Even though Revis would be worth it, I don't see them – I see them giving him more money, like I said, than other players that they have in the past. But I do believe if there's more money from another team on the table – I think you're seeing taillights from Darrell Revis. I really do.
Yeah, I think now that he has his ring, Revis wants to go to a team that he is the reason that they win, not that he is just an addition to help them win. Meaning that that this team wasn't going to win if they didn't get Revis. Once they got Revis, he was the missing piece. He's going to go to a team where he is the missing piece, wherever that may be. I don't think that he's the missing piece in Buffalo. I think he would be great there. I think he'd be a great influence on Stephen Gilmore, who I think has a chance to be a very special corner as well. But right now, the Bills' issue is not their defense. The Bills' issue is their offense. They need to figure out what they're going to do at running back, what they're going to do at quarterback. Unfortunately, those are the two key positions in football. So the Bills have those issues, and that's why Darrell Revis shouldn't be atop their list. As much as I'd love to have him, he is not the guy that the Bills need to be looking at necessarily.
Bills' defense is not the problem right now. The Bills' defense is already solid, where especially, you know, you're going to get Kiko back too. I just don't think that that's the main problem. And unfortunately, I think as far as running back is a problem for the Bills, but They do have a lot of questions. That quarterback position is seriously, you know, questionable at this point. And unfortunately, this is not a deep quarterback class either. And even if it were, even, you know, you have Jameis Winston, who I think is probably going to go to Tampa anyway, I don't view Mariota as the answer either, because I don't think, unless the only system he's going to thrive in would be a system like Philadelphia, because Chip Kelly was his coach, I don't think he's NFL ready. Even though he has, you know, a certain skill set, I don't think that skill set is going to translate very well into the NFL, especially with the whole they're not going to wait to build the team around him. The only team that he could be plugged into and succeed in would be Philadelphia.
I totally agree with your assessment on Mariota. The only quarterback in the draft that I would actually want the Bills to take is funny. The comps that they've made is they say this guy's like Jason Campbell. I happen to think he's better than Jason Campbell, and that's a little homerish of me, because he's the UCLA quarterback, and that's Brett Hundley, who I think could be a phenomenal quarterback in the NFL. We will have to wait and see how good my scouting skills are. But, you know, and he is a second-round pick, and I think the Bills could get him in the second round, because they don't have a first-round pick. The Browns have the Bills' first-round pick, so they're not getting him in the first round. What scares me is, and I don't know why it scares me, but the talk is that, you know, the number one free agent quarterback out there right now is Mark Sanchez. Obviously, Sanchez or Rex Ryan have that history, and he may be the next Bills starting quarterback. And it scares the hell out of me. But, you know, the reason why they have running back issues is Fred Jackson's great, but he's old. C.J. Spiller is going to be a free agent unless they re-sign him, and if they don't re-sign him, he's going to go to the Jets. And I don't want to see C.J. Spiller in a Jets uniform. And then the Bills have no other running backs.
Absolutely.
You know, your there are a lot of teams out there that need a lot of things, and that's why, you know, I think the Titans will trade that number two pick to the Eagles if the Eagles think that the Bucs are not going to take Mariota first. If they're going to take Mariota first, then the Eagles aren't going to get him, because I don't think the Eagles have enough to get the number one pick. I think they have enough to get the number two pick,
no.
Which sounds a little silly, but I think that it wouldn't surprise me to see them trade up to get the number two pick if they, like I said, if they believe that Jameis Winston is going to be the number one pick by the Bucs.
I think that he's going to be. I think just because of him being a Florida guy, you know, playing for the Seminoles, you know, the thing that.
But that's what we thought about Johnny
Winston
Manziel.
Is that he's Nuke LaLoosh, kind of. You know what I mean?
He is.
I think that's the best comparison for him, is that he's LaLoosh. And if you guys don't know what that means, then you seriously have never seen one
need
of the greatest movies ever made, Bull Durham.
You need to see Bull Durham.
And then you need to see Bull Durham, because that is probably, it flip-flops between number one and number two for me. I love that movie, but Jameis Winston is Nuke LaLoosh, where he has all the talent but a 5-cent head. And
okay, wait a minute. Stop. Time out. You can't gloss over this. You said it's number one or number two for you. What's the other one that it flip-flops with?
Tombstone.
I'll be your Huckleberry.
Yeah. It's a good one.
So you weren't talking sports movies. You were talking all-time movies for Bull Durham.
All-time movies, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, you have that.
Bull Durham
honest with you, I don't even have Bull Durham as my top two all-time baseball movies.
I love Bull Durham. I really do.
Oh, don't get me wrong. It's a great film, and if you haven't seen it, you absolutely have to. Shame on you for not seeing it.
I mean, we should do that one night. We should just, like, do, like, our top five favorite, like, films or baseball films, like baseball
films. I will tell you right now, my number one baseball film is nobody else's number one baseball film of all time. That's all I'm going to say. That's my tease for it. Ooh, tease. And it's not Major League, and it's not Sandlot. It's not League or Rookie of the Year. It's a great, great, great baseball film that nobody else has at number one. Maybe nobody else even has in their top three.
Now, see, that intrigues me, because I know that what my – I think, like, Bull Durham probably would be my favorite baseball movie. I do like Major League and stuff. I don't necessarily –
Major League is number two for me.
What was that?
Major League is my number two favorite
Major
baseball movie.
Major League is number two
time.
For you. That'd probably be number three for me. A movie that I actually really love, and I'll probably go off on a little tangent, but one of my music teachers in junior high school really was a baseball lover. And so he would let us watch movies sometimes during music class, because I don't think he really wanted to teach. So that was an easy way out. I don't think he wanted to teach, so he'd let us watch movies. And he was just like, I'm going to make you watch a movie, and you guys probably won't like it, but I don't care. And he made us watch The Natural. And I loved that movie. It's my
great
number.
Great film. Not my number one. Great film, though.
Yeah. The Natural is probably my number two baseball.
Then again,
movie.
I'll watch any movie that has baseball as a
yeah,
major
exactly,
theme. So that's not
exactly.
real. That's not really fair. I will tell you, my number one film had Charlie Sheen in it. It had John Cusack in it. That's exactly correct. That is my number one all-time baseball film. Very good.
See, I know.
Yes, you do.
Charlie Sheen.
And like I said, I don't think anybody else has that as their number one baseball film, but to me, that is the one movie, if it's on, I will watch it from beginning to end 8 million times over. I thought it was absolutely brilliant, historically correct, and it made me really feel, I'll tell you, I really feel for Buck Weaver, who was the third baseman of the 1919 Chicago White Sox, because he didn't throw any of that World Series, and he got busted and has been blackballed from the game, much like Shoeless Joe Jackson, who was too stupid to understand what the hell was going on. He should never have been blackballed either.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But we do have somebody on the line right now who is going to come on with us, and we are going to talk to him a little bit about maybe some college hoops. So let's bring on our more money guy, Greg Smith. You can follow him on Twitter at OnlyBestBets. Greg, how are you doing tonight?
Doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fantastic.
Good. We're talking baseball, so we're fantastic.
Before we get talking about making people money, the most important question is, what is your favorite baseball movie of all time?
Yeah.
Oh, Major League.
See, that was my number two. See, very talented guy, though. Major League, very good choice.
It is. Major League is a great movie. It really is. Because, see, Fish and I were talking about that. Were you surprised, Fish? Be honest. Were you surprised that you named two actors in the film and I knew right away what movie it was?
No, because you know who I am. You know who I am. I was impressed. Not surprised, though. You know who I am. You know what I like. And you know you're intelligent enough to know that John Cusack and Charlie Sheen were both in 8 Men Out.
Yeah. I do love 8 Men Out. I do. I really did love that film. See, for Fish, it was 8 Men Out. For me, my favorite baseball movie is Bull Durham. So.
But 8 Men Out plays right into Greg's hands because they got busted for betting on the World Series. You see how that works?
See, this is why. Maybe that's why you like it, too.
Absolutely. It could very well be. And before we talk any college hoops or anything, baseball totals came out last Sunday. Is that correct?
Yes.
Do you have any of them with you?
I do. What do you want to know?
Oh, fantastic. And this is exactly what I want to talk about. Did anything jump out to you?
Boy. You know, I'm going on thumbing through right now. There was one. I can't remember which one I was looking at that I thought was interesting. It was Houston. And let me find Houston here. Where are you, Houston? At 74.5 is the over-under for the Houston Astros.
And if I remember correctly, I said they were going to be a 500 team, so obviously you think I'm on the – I know I'm on the over there.
Yes, exactly. And I think I am too. I think Houston's been a much better team. And I think we've seen them progress as the last three, at least the last 3 years of developing a good program, or the program, college football, all of a sudden, but a good solid base of a franchise. So I like that 74.5. I like the over on that. I think they do win more than half the games.
Now there's a company out there called their analysis, and it's called the Pecota Standings, and they basically predict what everyone's win total is going to be every year. They predict ridiculously, I think, that the Dodgers are going to be the winningest team in baseball. I think the Nationals are going to be the winningest team in baseball. What does Vegas say?
Right now, looks like Los Angeles Dodgers are at 92.5 for total win totals. And then the Washington is also at 92.5. So,
interesting.
And those are the two highest. There isn't any 92.5 is the highest out there right now. So it looks like Vegas thinks that there's going to be a little bit of a battle between the two.
And obviously they've taken into account what the moves the Padres made. What's the Padres total?
And the Padres total is 85.5. Now, that's going to get higher, I think. I think you're going to see some people jump on that and try, and it'll move that line a little higher. Again, we're just before spring training, so you're going to see you're probably going to see these lines start to go a little bit higher just because people like to bet the overs on these particular futures. So I think that San Diego Padres line moves probably closer to the upper 80s by the time the first pitch is thrown.
Now, would you suggest that this is a good line of thinking, barring any catastrophic injuries or major trade, that especially for a team like the Cubs, because they're such a popular team, they should be bet up, the over should be bet up, to wait and bet the under, because while they'll be good, I don't think they'll be much better than a 500 team, and I would imagine their over-under is probably right there right now, but I think they're going to get bet up to the 85, 86 range.
Okay, right now they're at 82.5. So they're getting closer, and I like the way you're thinking. I mean, you get the Cubs, the Yankees, Dodgers, you know, those three franchises, you're right, are going to get bet up. I mean, the public likes to bet on those kind of teams. So if you want to take the under, you're best to wait until the last minute to bet the under for those particular favorite teams.
And one question, because if I don't ask this, Pamela's going to hit me from across the country there. What is the Red Sox win total?
let's see here. Boston Red Sox are at 86.5.
I was going to say 85 games.
There you go. So you, they,
so you're right. You and Vegas are thinking very similarly.
You think 85 wins, Pam, so therefore you're going to have to take the under because 86.5 is what it is.
Yeah. You know what? Let me get a little bit of a glimpse at the starting rotation during spring training because I have I have feelings about this. So
okay.
I might have to take
like
the under
it.
With the 85.
Okay, I like it. Yeah, so in the lowest right now, and the lowest is the Philadelphia Phillies, and they're at 68.5 as the lowest.
I think that may actually, believe it or not, I think that may actually be a little high for the Phillies. I think this team could lose 100 games, which means they would only win 62. So I'm 6.5 games under that total right now.
Yeah. So I agree with you on that as well. I think the Phillies are not going to be that good. 68.5 is, you know, and I don't know this answer, Fish. Maybe you do. I don't know what the lowest, I know what the highest win is, most wins. I don't know what the lowest win is in the season.
I do not know
sure.
the answer.
Well, I'll tell you this. Let me ask you this. Do you know who the highest is?
The highest amount of wins?
Yeah.
I thought we just discussed, wasn't it just the Dodgers and the Nationals?
No. I'm talking all the time. Like the most wins in a season.
Oh, yeah. It was the 2001 Seattle Mariners.
Very, very good. Then they got beat by the Yankees in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, I think they won 112 games, something like that.
Yeah, I would have to say 116, but I could be off.
I think maybe you're right. I thought 116. I thought that sounds awfully high. I'm going to go down a little bit, but you may be right because that does sound about right. 116.
So now I don't know who the lowest is, though. That's the thing I don't know. So I was just
the fewest. Ooh, that's a good question. Let me fewest wins. I mean, I know in basketball it's the 72-76ers.
Yeah. I mean, is it the Pirates? Is it the Pirates?
I think there was a Mets team in there that was really, really bad.
And there was an Expos team that was really bad, too.
Yeah. I would say the lowest. I'm going to guess lowest total is somewhere in the 50s. Is probably my guess. I don't think any team's lost more than that, more than 110 games or so.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you're talking 60 games under 500 at that point.
Yeah, right. Lowest wins MLB season.
It's got to be in 162 game season too, because remember, back in 1893, they may have played 30 game seasons.
Well,
right,
sure.
So you can't count that.
Right.
We got to
make
it fair. Did you find it yet, Fish?
40 by the 1962 Mets. 40.
There you go. The amazings.
The not so amazings in '62. they were absolutely brutal.
There it is. You're right. 1962 Mets. Yep. That's a lot of wins.
And yet they still
have
fans.
I mean, when you consider you 162, they play 162 games a year, season. 40's not that great.
And you were correct though. The Mariners won 116 games in 2001, but the 1906 also won 116 games, but only had 36 losses because obviously they played fewer games. Had a winning percentage of .763.
Wow.
They won more than three out of every four games.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you're gonna make money there for sure.
And here's the last bar bet: the worst winning percentage in history. The 1899 Cleveland Spiders went 20-134 for a winning percentage of 130.
Wow. Well, that's not very good.
No.
The Cleveland Spiders. Never heard that forever.
And that's why the Spiders are no longer a team.
Maybe I should have named them the Black Widows instead, and they would have had a little bit more of a killer instinct.
And I will tell you that
maybe they should have adapted like the Mamba theory, where they kind of put one persona on the field and one persona off the field, like Kobe does.
Yes. And that 62 Mets team was almost caught by the 2003 Detroit Tigers, who only won 43 games. And that's a little even more recent, obviously, than 62. So that was just, 10 years ago. So you think about it, in 10 years, this Tigers team has gone from a 43-win team to a perennial division winner and playoff and World Series contender.
Right. Yeah.
That's
exactly.
Unbelievable to think that. Talk about it.
Completely. So since the Super Bowl has now history and the football season is over, how goes everything for you for college hoops?
Well, I'm in a little bits of a dry spell here. Well, not dry spell, but I had a few losses there. I was at a 61% winning clip, but my variance kicked in a little bit and brought me down to about 56. But I'm hoping to finish strong in the end of the February heading into March. So we'll see.
And I think it's going to end up a lot like, baseball player stats, that what's on the back of your baseball card is what you are. So, if you're usually picking at a much higher rate, which I believe that you do, that you will pick it up. So if you've been doing poorly, now's the time to listen to you because you're about to turn it around.
Well, that's very true. Usually I feel okay. If I go 0-for-3 sometime in a night, I feel good that as long as I stick to it. Excuse me, as long as I stick to my patterns, my same philosophy, then everything just kind of, you flip the coin, the thing, it'll end up on my side. So, but that's tough. It's tough to stay disciplined. And, it's one of the challenges I have with a lot of my clients is, and that's why I encourage them to do a season-long a package with me, because they get my bets every single day for the whole season. I mean, if you take me just for a weekend, you get one snapshot. I can go 3-for-3, I can go 0-for-3. But if you use me over the time period, then you get the full scale of a chance of hitting a 56, 57, 58%. So it's tough to convey that message to clients to get them to keep putting the bets out there. And that's why money management is important, because you go 0-for-3, you don't want to bet anymore because he's cold. Well, you don't do that, and I can guarantee you that you'll start winning games all of a sudden. So it's a disciplined game. It's a disciplined industry, and you have to be able to adjust to it.
I completely agree with you. That's what I was saying. If you went 0-for-3 and I saw that you'd gone 0-for-3, I'd be all over you the next night, because I'm thinking you're probably going to go 3-3-0. So.
and the other thing too is that it's something that I don't really talk about so much, but I'll bring it up. Is that this is a different industry. I mean, you got to keep in mind that you're dealing with, for the most part, with the male gender. And when you talk about sports with the male, they get very opinionated. They have their own views on what they think is going to happen. So you can go 8-for-9, and if you don't hit that ninth one, that male, alpha male ego jumps right in and will let you know right away that you were wrong. I had it right. What's wrong with you? I just woke up this morning and I figured it out. And you do this, blah, blah, blah. You got to take it with a grain of salt, because you will get people like that will get very ticked off that they're going to pay for a service and you tell them to take a play and something that they don't agree with, and it ends up being what they thought. Then you can have a problem sometimes with those kind of people. So it's not something I can talk about too much, but it happens. It happens, and that's why.
Oh, I'm sure, because people, it's very easy for people to forget the good that you've done all season, and easy to then just focus on the bad.
It's not just that though, guys. It's that it's easy to give somebody credit and accolades when they've picked the right thing for you and you win, but the easiest thing when you lose is for you to blame the person. And what it boils down to is this choice was yours to begin with, whether you wanted to listen or not. If you have your own instinct, then you can choose to go with it or go against it. I just feel like when somebody loses, it's easier to put blame on somebody else except yourself. So my little take.
When I go 4-for-4, I hear crickets. And it's not like I'm flooded with emails saying that a boy, way to go. I go 0-for-4 and my emails are just loaded. So
absolutely, it was like in the Super Bowl.
Oh yeah. I mean, and the Super Bowl is my fault too. I got a little bit carried away with what I thought. I really believe that the Seattle, and I still do. I believe Seattle was the right side, but I was was very vocal on that, and because it kind of got to me a little bit, the fact that you saw how defenses have done so well just recently. I mean, you took Ohio State, you looked at Seattle last year. You just look at the defensive teams; they were just winning games, and Seattle was had a better defense. And I just, but you know.
I'll say this. You have more of a right to still believe Seattle was the right side than I do to still believe that Oregon was the right side.
Oh, yeah. True. Yeah, so anyway, it's a difficult industry sometimes, but and that's why being disciplined is very very important. I have a lot of my friends that give out my three picks. And I'll go 3-for-3, and I have one buddy of mine that I go 3-for-3, and he'll take all the winnings from the 3-for-3, and he'll put all the winnings down on the fourth game. Well, I lose the fourth game, and he's out money, and it's just stupid. I mean, you got to be smart about it. So
yeah,
anyway,
as you said, it's all about money management. And with baseball season coming up, do you give out picks in baseball, or do you try to stay away from it? I know a lot of guys try to stay away from baseball because it happens to be one of the hardest ones to predict, especially because no matter who's on the mound, if Clayton Kershaw's on the mound, if he's not pitching a complete game, that bullpen could easily blow it for him, and that it's hard to take that into account.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, in my opinion, it is the toughest. Second of all, I got a lot of fellow handicappers that said the same thing. So I think if you were to take a poll on which one, if you ask 100 handicappers, professional handicappers, what they thought was the toughest sport, I think you'd find that 75% of them would say Major League Baseball. And the reason why it's tough, I believe, is that baseball goes in streaks. And it's very common to see teams rack off like 6-in-a-row win, 7-in-a-row win. And it's very easy to see teams that go lose 7-in-a-row. And so you have to stay – you got to be really disciplined with your money. And by the way, they're money line bets, right? So I mean, you don't just lay 100 and win 100. You're laying 160 to win 100, or you're laying 100 to win, you know, 180. So it's tough to manage that for money management ways when you're doing money. It's the only sport, guys. It's the same with hockey. It's the only sport to where you can have a losing percentage and make money. Really.
Absolutely. Because, and sometimes there's a play that looks so it's on paper. You go, oh, there's no way the Rockies are going to beat the Nationals, but you're getting such great odds for that pitcher that you almost can't turn it down.
Right. I mean, right. Exactly. And
you're getting plus 260. You're getting plus 265. How do you say no?
Well, right. And I think that's probably a smart play, is to take that plus 260, because I think that Vegas kind of understands that it's a reason why they're there. I mean, if it's plus 260, it's because Kershaw's on the mound, or, you know, or Verlander or whatever. And so everyone knows how great they are. And so it's just a real easy play. And you should be careful with those kind of plays, because I would never lay 260 to win 100. I just wouldn't do that.
No, exactly. So back to my question, are you handicapping, or do you handicap baseball?
I have one to three scenarios that I play that pop up maybe once, maybe twice a week throughout the season. So basically I'll get 2, 4, 6, I'll get about maybe 8 to 10 plays over a month period. And I look for certain spots, certain criteria with the pitchers and teams, you know, going back to back 3-dayers and then get back on. So there's little scenarios I look for, but all in all, I don't bet baseball every day, and I just look for spots where I can make a bet like once or twice a week. So this is no.
Okay, and that's good to know, and I think people should follow that advice by all means. I like the game. I'm not an everyday guy anyway, but with baseball I wouldn't. I feel more comfortable, believe it or not, picking baseball than I do any other sport, just because I know so much about it, and that is my, you know, that's right in my wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand why you wouldn't. And like I said, sometimes you have to take that play because it's too amazing a play not to, it plus 265 or plus 280, even if you are going against the Kershaw.
I mean,
you know,
I
Kershaw won 21 games last year, but he wasn't 21-0.
Right. And I can tell you this, that if you do this long enough, you start to know your spots. And what I mean by spots is, I know in September and October for college football and for NFL, I'm really good. November, I stink. And so I will lay off November. And then December comes around, and I actually do really well in the bowl game. And then January comes around, and I just kind of focus in on the NFL playoffs. And then when February comes around, that's where college basketball. So what I'm saying is that every sport even has, at least for my betting style, has little particular slots in which I'm really good at, little particular weeks of the season. Baseball is kind of similar with that. I actually, when it hits after spring, after the All-Star break in July, I definitely don't make any bets with baseball. The only time I'm making bets with baseball is May and June, maybe a little bit in April, but that's it. So,
what are some of the criteria you look for a baseball game?
Well, one of the criteria I look for is, and this has done really well for me, is I look for teams that have been swept and then get another opportunity to play them again. So let's say the Mets sweep the Phillies. Well, the next time the Phillies play the Mets, I will bet that game, the first game of the series. If they lose that game, I will double up on that again and try to go to the second. I don't win the second, I lay off it. But but 9 times out of 10, though, it's a pretty successful trend that I use throughout the season.
So the Mets sweep the
well
Phillies, you bet the Phillies the first time they play the Mets again.
Yes. Yes. And
that makes sense.
And that just comes really from my baseball experience. I mean, when I played ball, we knew when we got swept. You get swept in baseball, that's like getting shut out in a football game. And so when that next opportunity comes to play them, believe me, you play, for some reason, it's tough to beat them again.
Absolutely. Just like they say in football, it's tough to beat a team 3 times in a season.
And this is exactly what this plays into. Yeah, exactly.
And if you look at it, especially divisional rivals, no team or very rarely does a team go, because of the unbalanced schedule, I think you play 19 games against your divisional opponents. No team goes 19-0 against your divisional opponents. I think the Dodgers last year, and I use them as an example just because I'm more familiar with them, against the Padres, who were actually, you know, not a great team, but not a horrible team. The Dodgers were only like 10-6 or 10-7 against them. So, you know, it's not like any team, especially against a division rival, a team that you know so well, it's very difficult to win a lot of games against them.
Right. I mean, another little fun trend that I've used in the past that's worked really well is pitchers making their debut. And here's why. Is that there's a couple reasons. A, there's not a lot of scouting on them. Okay, so the batters are going to be a little bit off guard. Two, the managers will give that debut pitcher the best opportunity to win. Usually, you're going to see them come in like at home, on a home game, maybe in the middle of a series, maybe somewhere where, like for instance, a good play I made 2 years ago. I took Cole for the
Garrett Cole for the Pirates.
For the Pirates. And he was playing, and he made his debut, ironically,
in St. Louis.
In St. Louis. Now, what's interesting about that was that he had family in St. Louis. So it was a play in which the manager felt comfortable in giving him a start in St. Louis, and he won the game. So
I just want to point out before you continue that I knew exactly the game that you were talking about, and this was a game that was 2 years ago out of, you know, they play 162 in a season. So, I'm just once again tooting my own horn about my baseball prowess. That was all. Go ahead.
Anyway, so that's kind of how I look at those games. But there's nothing really too fancy about it.
Am I correct in saying he dominated the Cardinals? If I remember correctly, he had 10 to 12 strikeouts in that game, I think.
Yeah, he left. I think they pitched him over the seventh inning or something, which is a little bit unusual, and for your debut. And the final score was like 8-0 or something. I don't know what it was, something like that. But it was an easy win. Easy win. And that was a pretty good St. Louis team too. He was pitching up against. So
yeah, it's the St. Louis team that went to the World Series and lost.
Yeah, I mean, there's value for it. I think you delay. And here's the best part about it. See, so here's what I try to get my listeners to understand. So why would a guy who's making his debut as a pitcher, okay, who's on the road pitching against St. Louis, a very good team at the time, why would you have to lay $121 to win $100? Why is he a favorite? And that's what I'm trying to get people to understand. Don't think you know more than the odds makers, because he's a favorite for a reason. And that's a good lesson to learn there, is that the Vegas knew it and he took off and won the game easily. So just a little lesson there to talk about.
And you know what? I think that's a very valuable lesson, because you're right, and it's what we've said all along. Vegas is there for a reason. Vegas is there because people lose for the most part. So as you said, don't ever think that you know more than the odds makers.
If it doesn't make sense to you, it's because it doesn't make sense to you, and you need to go the other way. If you see a line and it just screams, "I'm going to play that line," I would be careful, be real careful.
I think you hit the nail.
True, it probably is.
Yeah,
exactly.
And, you know, I hate the term, because people use this term all the time, especially in college football, about a trap game. But in betting, I think there really are trap games. I don't necessarily think there are in real life. I don't believe in the trap game, but I absolutely do in betting.
Oh, yeah, there's absolutely. I've seen it happen more times than not. I mean, teams look ahead to different games, and they're in between, especially in NFL. You know, you get between because every win in college football is a little more meaningful. But in NFL, you can afford to lose a game here and there. But it's called a division sandwich. So if you're sitting there and you're playing two non-conference games, but you have a division game in the middle, I mean, you know, they're going to put more attention towards that division game, theoretically, than towards the non-conference game. So, it's definitely one of those things where you it's a look-ahead game or a bad spot, or how else you want to call it, let down, whatever you want to say it is.
Fantastic. So go ahead and let all listeners know, A, where they can reach you, B, if you have any other specials for the end of either college basketball with March Madness approaching, or for the NBA.
Right now I got my special is $99 for the rest of the college basketball season, all the way up through March Madness. I'm at onlybestbets.com. It's been a long season. I love this time of year, but when April hits, it'll be a nice time to get away and kind of do some recharging.
When you're going to Hawaii?
Well, I'm going to be in Hawaii the last week of March, and that's going to be during the Final Four. I can spit out a couple of games on the beach. That won't be a problem.
I can just see you lounging around, Mai Tai in hand, laptop on the other, going, okay, here's who's going to win. Take Michigan State over Kentucky.
After my fifth Mai Tai, I tell Lisa, hey, watch this. Play Kentucky at minus 10.
Real quick, does Kentucky go undefeated the entire season?
I don't think they will. I think there's too many close calls. It's tough to go undefeated. They have their target on their back. It'll be a real tough challenge for them to get there, although they are in a conference in which they can get it, because that's not the toughest conference in basketball, but I don't think it's going to happen. We'll see.
Do they need to lose before the NCAA tournament starts?
I think they do. Those kids are young, and I tell you now, Calipari does. I mean, I think it sounds silly, but if he gets into the tournament, then he's not going to want to lose. But I think if you were to ask him straight up behind closed doors, do you want to win? Do you want a loss under your belt? I think he would. I think he really would. I think it would open up the kids' eyes. I mean, it's tough.
No team has been undefeated, I think, since 76 Indiana, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, I mean, well, UNLV got all the way to the Final Four and got beat.
And then lost to Duke.
Lost to Duke. And Duke went back-to-back that year.
Yep.
Or at least that was part of the back-to-back. That was the first part of the back-to-back. So,
and that was the last team that really came close to being undefeated was that UNLV team, which I loved that UNLV team. A lot of people hated them because you know, the whole arrogance and feeling around it. And, you know, now that we've lost the Tark, the Shark, it just puts in a whole new perspective. But still, I love that UNLV team. And that was, yeah, you're right. And I don't think these kids can handle that pressure, being in the Final Four even undefeated, because not only have the pressure of winning the title, they have the pressure of trying to stay undefeated.
Exactly. I mean, there are a lot of teams right now, especially in the top five. Look at Gonzaga, Wisconsin, Virginia. You're looking at teams that have had experience, not only just in the tournament, but getting deep in the tournament, getting to the 16, Elite Eight, Final Four. you know, experience is going to be key when they get that deep into March. So with those kids not having that sort of experience, although the Harrison brothers have, so they're two guys that have, they got to the national championship, but that experience is key in college basketball. It's key in any sport, really. And so it's going to be a challenge for Kentucky. I thought it was going to be last year, and they got all the way to the championship game. We'll see how it plays out, but I don't know if I'm going to say that they're going to go undefeated. I think they're going to trip here in the next couple of weeks.
Fantastic. Greg, thank you so much as per usual. We will talk to you again next
thank
week
you,
and get more pearls of wisdom. The website, once again, is onlybestbets.com, correct?
That is correct.
Phenomenal. Thank you, my friend, and we'll talk to you again next week. Be good.
Okay, have a good day. Bye-bye.
Take care.
And, of course, that was our Mo Money guy, Greg Smith, where you could go to onlybestbets.com to get all his betting lines. And, Fish, I agree with him about Kentucky. I think it's almost more beneficial for Kentucky to lose, although it's hard for me to bet against them. I love the way that they're playing basketball right now.
As silly as it sounds, I completely agree.
Or not, I love the way they're playing.
No, absolutely. And as silly as it sounds, I completely agree with you that, you know, you never think you should say a team should lose. But I think it would be very beneficial for them to get over the adversity of that loss, and B, have that loss when you can absorb it and it's not going to kill your season. A loss in the tournament obviously kills their season.
Right.
So,
it's
one
and done. Once you're in the tournament, you lose, you're out. So
exactly.
We shall see. I think it would be exciting for the Kentucky team to go undefeated. I think a lot of people want to see that. I don't think we're going to see that, but it would be an exciting thing to witness.
It absolutely would. And before we say our goodbyes for the evening, who is the show brought to us by?
What was that?
I said before we say our goodbyes for the evening,
is the show brought to you by? Trendsetter to Trendsetter Magazine and their partner, sister magazine, Fansetters, where you can follow them at fansetters.com to go view the new Super Bowl edition of the magazine featuring stories on Ryan Riddle and, of course, our good friend Tim McTyre, plus remembrance pieces on Stuart Scott and Sandy Grossman.
And I hear the magazine has the best managing editor in the business, so I think it's very important.
I think she's okay.
I've heard she's the best, so I think it's very important that people go and check out this magazine because it is one of the best sports magazines out there. You know, I'm a guy that used to read Sports Illustrated and the Sporting News, and I will tell you all now, I hate Sports Illustrated. I think it's too preachy. Never been a fan. Sporting News I love, but this Trendsetter, Fansetters, best magazine ever, period.
Yeah, it's good because also the fans, too. We're basically, you know, catering to giving the people what they want. So go check
Absolutely,
it out. Follow them on Twitter as well at Fansetters. And you can follow Trendsetters at T2T Magazine on Twitter as well.
Because I'll tell you, as important as the players are and as important as the owners are, and this is what I've always said, and which is why there's always been, whenever there's been a collective bargaining agreement, I always thought the fans should have a say. The fans are the most important thing. Because if fans don't show up, they're not playing. There is no baseball. There is no football. There is no basketball. There is no hockey. There's no nothing if the fans don't show up. So the fans are as important or more important than anybody else in this whole thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, Fish, we want to send our well wishes to Russell Baxter, who is under the weather today, and he will be back with us next week. So get well,
Yay.
Russell, please.
Yeah, Huggy
and
Bear, get well. And next week, I think we should start taking a look at our first position. Which position would you like to go with first? You want to start with catchers, first basemen, outfielders? What do you want to do for our fantasy look next week?
I think you got to start with one. I think you do. You got to start with one.
Okay, so we start with number one. That'll be the pitcher. Pitchers we'll start with next week. Works for me.
Works for me, too. So everybody tune in at 9 o'clock Eastern time. That would be 6 o'clock Pacific time. And we will get you all caught up on all your fantasy baseball lineups. Some, you know, NFL news for the off-season trades that are going to happen, potentially. And the NFL
franchising.
Draft. And, of course,
franchise
tags,
players.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have a specific opinion on a certain rivalry team franchising my certain favorite diva wide receiver. So I will give you that opinion next week. And of course,
I look forward to hearing that. And let's hope that next week that there's some sun out in Boston and some of that snow has melted away, so you're only down to like 80 feet instead of 90 feet.
Yeah, hopefully. Everybody, take care and have a fantastic week. Bye.
That's right.
Everybody.
Be safe out there, especially on the East Coast. Good night, everyone.